Good morning, everyone. My name is Laura Ann, and today I'm going to be talking about my PhD research, breeding for cotton flea hopper resistance in upland cotton. So first, I'll go through and give you some background information, particularly on the insect and why it is a cotton pest, followed by a really brief overview of some previous research on the matter, and then I'll delve into my research, field studies from both 2012 and 2013. And finally, I'll draw some conclusions from the interpretations of my data. So the insect you see here is the cotton flea hopper. It's a hemipteran of the family Myridae, and it's a piercing sucking insect, which means that it feeds with a proboscis instead of chewing mandibles. And the cotton flea hopper is rather unique. It has a very wide host range. In the College Station area, where my study took place, it has been recorded feeding on over 160 different host plants. The insect is primarily herbivorous, but it is known later in the cotton growing season to feed on moth eggs, particularly the cotton bollworm and the tobacco budworm. So later in the growing season, it can be seen as a marginally beneficial insect, but today we're just going to talk about it purely as a pest insect. So just to give you a little bit of information about its life cycle, the cotton flea hopper survives the winter as eggs. The female lays her eggs under the bark of the host plants, which in College Station is woolly croton, and that's how the eggs survive the cold. And then in the early spring, the nymphs begin to hatch out, and they feed on wild hosts. And during the late spring to early summer, as those hosts begin to naturally die off, the flea hoppers migrate into the cotton fields. And in Texas, this migration typically coincides with the initiation of squaring in the cotton. So once in the cotton fields, the insects feed primarily on pinhead and matchhead-sized squares. And the feeding results in what's called blasting, and there's a picture of it just there to the right. So feeding results in ovary rot, which kills the square, and then the plant drops the square, which leaves these characteristic scars. And excessive blasting can result in delayed maturity of the crop, as well as whip-like vegetative growth. So in Texas, where my study takes place, dryland cotton is particularly affected by cotton flea hopper damage. And as you can see from the map here, major regions where this insect is a problem are the rolling plains, the blacklands, the coastal bend, and the lower Rio Grande Valley. And what this graphic shows is an estimated number of bales lost due to cotton flea hopper damage. So it can be pretty excessive. Of rolling plains, for instance, over 20,000 bales lost in 2010. So just in perspective, within the last decade, the cotton flea hopper has ranked in the top five cotton pests. And as of yet, there is no transgenic solution for this insect on the market. It's controlled purely with chemical pesticides. So previous research into natural resistance to the cotton flea hopper has focused on leaf pubescence. And in general, what was found was that flea hoppers seem to prefer the hairier plants, but they cause more damage to the smoother plants. So if you're looking at a field and you look at any given plant, if it's a hairy plant, you probably see the insects on it, as opposed to looking at a smooth plant where you don't see any insects, but there's much more damage on the smoother plants. But as of yet, no one has characterized a type of resistance. So my research is kind of a continuation of looking at leaf pubescence as a possible resistance factor. So my main objective was to evaluate the breeding value of several lines. My female parents are known susceptibles, and they were bred for high yield. I have a smooth plant, TAM07B45, and a hairy plant, TAM06WE14. And then my male parents are what we suspected to be flea hopper resistant. They were part of a previous program that had the goal of breeding for flea hopper resistance, and I inherited three families that comprised 18 lines total. And each family is comprised of two smooth lines, two hairy lines, and two pilose lines. And in order to evaluate the breeding value of these lines, I performed field screening in 2012 and 2013. So in 2012, I screened in College Station and Corpus Christi, and I screened the lines on a family level basis. I use a split plot design, with main plots being insecticide treated and untreated in order to have control plots where there were no flea hoppers. And my main data collection tool in 2012 was weekly plant mapping to kind of track square loss across the season. I also took flea hoppers, a number of flea hoppers per terminal, and we machine harvested at the end of the season for yield estimates. In 2013, I selected one family from 2012 and screened all six lines individually. I only screened in College Station in 2013 because of the drought in Corpus Christi. Again, I used a split plot design with main plots being insecticide treated and untreated. My sampling method was slightly different in 2013. Weekly sampling was counting the number of healthy squares, damaged squares, and scars in order to get an estimated percent square loss. And again, I looked at flea hopper counts, and we hand harvested in 2013 for yield estimates. So now I'll go into my results, beginning with data in 2012. In 2012, looking at flea hopper numbers, what we found was that the flea hoppers did seem to prefer the experimental families over the Czechs, and you remember the Czechs are my female parents. And so we kind of expected to see this trend because these experimental families contain both hairy and pilose plants, which the literature said that the flea hoppers prefer. And just to give you some perspective, economic threshold for cotton flea hopper is 25 flea hoppers per 100 terminals. Just a note, in 2013, I did take cotton flea hopper counts, but we didn't have much pressure, so I'm not presenting that data here today because it's not significant. So in terms of square loss in 2012, even though there were much higher numbers of flea hoppers on the experimental families, the percent square loss was significantly lower for my experimental families than my Czechs. And we kind of expected to see this, but we were pleased to see that it was such a big difference. You'll note that in both treated and untreated, percent square loss for the experimental families was below 30% for all three families. Whereas for instance, the smooth Czech 07B45, almost 60% in the untreated and about 41% in the treated. So what we gather from this is that we do see some level of resistance within these experimental lines. Because my project focused on pubescence as a resistance factor, I wanted to break this down into phenotype. And so the literature says that smooth plants are more susceptible than hairy plants, but when I break this down on a phenotype basis, we see that even within the smooth plants, we have a level of resistance when compared to the Czech. And the same trend is also true for the hairy plants. So again, it looks like we do have some plants that are showing pretty good levels of resistance. So from this data, I selected family GHO4 to continue screening in 2013. And GHO4, just like all the other families, is comprised of six lines, two pilose, two hairy, and two smooth. And so in 2013, I evaluated these lines on an individual basis, and I'll present that data now. So 2013, I did weekly sampling for 4 weeks and analyzed it as repeated measures with week as the repeated measure. And as you can see, across the three sampling dates, the experimental lines, which are highlighted in yellow here, significantly, well, as a trend, they outperformed the Czechs. And as sampling date as sampling date progressed, that difference became more pronounced and more significant. So it's very encouraging to see that we have a level of resistance again in the year 2013. And in looking at pubescence, in date 4, 20-1 genotype is a smooth plant. So it had the highest percent square set, and it wasn't a hairy plant or a pilose plant. In terms of yield, in 2012, this is going back to evaluating the lines as families. The families did not perform as well as the Czechs, and we kind of expected to see this. Particularly the pilose plants within these families tend to be rather short, squatty plants with low bowl load. So we kind of expected these to be lower yielders, and this trend was true across College Station and Corpus Christi, with the exception of 06WE14 in Corpus Christi in 2012. And my guess is that because Corpus Christi was grown in dryland conditions, that might be why 06WE14 didn't perform quite as well. In 2013, looking at yield, again, 07B45 is the top performer, just like it was in 2012. But what we see here is that 20-2 and 20-1, which showed high levels of resistance, also are high yielders. And this is particularly encouraging when we think of using these lines in a breeding perspective. We selected our female lines because they were high yielders, but it's nice to know that we also have some resistant lines that are also high yielding. Again, you see the Pylos plants are pretty low yielding. That's kind of what we expected. Keep in mind that I also hand harvested these fields in 2013, so that's one reason why the yield estimates are a little higher in 2013 than they were in 2012. So in conclusion, when I looked at flea hopper numbers, my results were congruent with previous literature, and that the flea hoppers did seem to prefer the hairier plants over the smoother plants. However, when I looked at square loss, I did find a level of resistance even among the smooth plants, despite previous research that suggests that smoother plants are more susceptible than hairier plants. So in looking at this from a breeding perspective, it does look like we have some good candidate lines for breeding, and I have actually already begun breeding with the lines from family GH04, and next year I'll be screening the progeny from those lines, and hopefully we'll see that these resistant traits have transferred across breeding lines. So with that, I would like to thank Dr. Haig, my advisor, Dr. Brewer, Dr. Knutson, and Dr. Wayne Smith, who are all my committee members, Darwin Anderson from Corpus Christi, who helped me plant, and Cotton Incorporated for funding, and Texas AgriLife for funding as well, and finally everyone at the Cotton Incorporated Lab for their support. And I'll take any questions. Yes.
Did I understand that you went from looking at percent square loss or percent square set from 2012 to 2013?
Yes, the question was regarding my sampling method. I did change methods, and the reason for that was I screened fewer lines in 2012, so it was more feasible to use plant mapping as a tool than it was in 2013. And I'm also going to be screening even more lines next year, so I wanted to kind of transition my data collection method so that it would be a little easier and less time consuming to collect that data. Yes?
Do you have any speculative idea why it was that the smooth ones didn't perform well? What may be their mechanism for resistance?
The question is regarding why I might think the smooth plants performed well. These plants were all bred with Pylos, from Pylos parents. I think the female parent was used. I think Pylos was the female parent used, and Pylos has been shown in the literature to be highly resistant. And so I'm guessing that some of those traits, even though the plants are smooth, some of those traits were transferred.
Any other questions?
Yes. Did we look at any other insects other than flea hoppers? No, we didn't. One thing that I noted is that the hairier plants seem to be more susceptible to caterpillar damage later in the season, but I didn't quantify that. During the data collection period, really it was kind of past the point of aphids and thrips, and you know, mostly flea hoppers were the only insect causing damage at that time, so that's all that I looked at. Yes? Say that one more time.
Any difference between hairy bracts and smooth bracts?
Was there any difference between hairy bracts and smooth bracts? I didn't quantify the pubescence of the bracts, but the Pylos plants, you know, the whole plant is almost velvety, even the bracts. And the hairy plants, I think the leaf hairiness is a good indication of bract hairiness, but no, I didn't look at that in particular. That would be a good thing to look at. Thank you.